All righty, very good. Welcome to the MediaBids Power Hour. We are delighted that all of you are joining us. This is a conference call that we have been hosting over the last 5+ years and a call that we've been hosting in the industry for 15 years. This marks our 15th year anniversary of Power Hour and my 25th in the publishing sector. Couldn't be more excited to be here with you and Jed, who is the owner and founder of MediaBids. Jed, love for you to say some opening words to the group. Thank you, as always, for all the work that you and your team do behind the scenes. So how about a hello to the group and a little intro to yourself and MediaBids. Get us kicked off here. I'll say a hello, and then we're diving right in to talk about why buyers buy, okay?
All right, great. Thanks very much, yep. Ernest. You know, first of all, I want to thank Ernest. He's really the one that drives these calls and does a great job of them. I always learn a lot just by listening to him. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate it. MediaBids is happy to sponsor these, and we really enjoy sort of talking about print. We're always looking for ways to make publications more successful, and if you would like to learn more about MediaBids, give us a call, check out our website, but we would love to increase our relationship with you. So thanks again for joining us.
Wonderful. And as many of our clients do, they work closely with Jed and his team. They do a wonderful job with MediaBids. I would encourage you to reach out to them and learn more about how they could help you and your publication and certainly your revenue stream. So my name is Ernest. My company is Power Hour. I've been around publishing since the mid-'80s. I have a deep passion for helping publications and advertising sales teams win and succeed. We have not only a business coaching and training division of Power Hour, we have a recruiting division. We also have an investment banking division, which means we help our clients buy and sell companies. We have a search engine and website revenue optimization team of 10 behind the scenes that serve our clients. We're real proud of that. And we do a lot of pre-hire testing, helping our clients make great hiring decisions before they actually make job offers. So today we're going to be talking about why buyers buy. We have 7 pages of questions that have come in already. We will field any of your questions real time. Just simply send an email to ernest@powerhour.com or hit reply to the confirmation or the reminder that got you here, and we'll be feeding those in as well. So, Jed, I know we looked at a lot of these questions. We'll be working them in as we roll through our key points here about why buyers buy. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about 3 key points. We're going to talk about a survey that was done of business decision makers. We're going to talk about the 10 most important recommendations that those decision makers gave about how to improve your ad sales performance. And then the last part of our call is we'll talk about how to incorporate these 10 recommendations into your daily success. So we encourage you to turn off your cell phones, set aside your email or Blackberries, and to not multitask during this window of time because it's going to move very, very quickly, and we want you to assimilate as much as possible. Okay? So point number one, Jed, is what can you learn from a survey that was done of 1,100 business decision makers who were asked one question? What one recommendation of advice would you give to media sales reps? Now, this was a survey that was done in the fourth quarter of last year. This is very relevant, and these were small to medium-sized business owners to the specific decision makers, okay? And they were asked about the advice that they would give to media sales reps. And what's most interesting, Jed, it ties right into some of the points that we've already seen. Not a single person said, the one advice we want to give to media sales reps is, charge us a lower price.
Right.
Shocking, right, Jed?
Right.
We want to spend less. All right? And I want to open up this story, open up this meeting here today with a quick story because, Jed, I'm holding a key. And I'm holding a key, and I know you've heard this along the way. I'm holding a key, and, Jed, I'd like you to pay $10,000 for the key I'm holding.
Right. Seems like a lot.
Seems like a lot just for a key, right?
Right.
Okay? This is the whole essence of value. But if I said, gee, Jed, it's the key to a $1 million house, and I want $10,000.
Right. It's a bargain.
Now it feels like a bargain, okay? And we're opening up this meeting with that conversation and that visual for all of you, because what we do as advertising media sales reps and what we do with our publications, newspapers, and magazines of all kinds who are joining us on our call today is we're creating value. And you're going to hear that through the course of the 10 recommendations that were shared by these decision makers and business owners. None of them asked for a lower price, but they asked very specifically for how you prepare, how you listen, how you follow through, how you cut to the chase and provide them the information that they're looking for. And those are the key points for you to recognize, okay? In addition to the 10 points we're going to cover today, there are 10 additional points. There were 20 recommendations. We're going to share with you 10 of those today, and then later in the year, we'll come back and we'll talk about the other 10, okay? So let's work our way through. There are 10 specific recommendations that will improve your ad sales performance. So number one, do not promise more than can be delivered. Do not promise more than can be delivered is the first recommendation given by those who are buying advertising. In the mid-80s, I worked for a little bitty company by the name of Motorola. And in those days, we were selling car phones. But the car phones, different than cell phones today, only had a certain distance or a certain range. So when we sat down with those who were buying, and they said, well, can I use my car phone here, here, and here? And we'd pull out our maps. And the maps had a circle, and the circle was 20 miles circumference from that tower, which meant it had to be line of sight. Jed, you might remember those were the days when you had really big car antennas, right? That would reach out. In fact, just as a grin, if you look at police cars to this day, especially in smaller communities, they still have these big antennas off the back or the top of their cars, really big, some as high as 3 feet high, okay? And the big deal in those days was that the tower had to see those antennas. And we knew, and the engineers had designed the towers, to actually work in a 30-mile circumference. So why, if in fact it was 30 miles, why would we show them, Jed, just 20 miles?
So that you were over-delivering and under-promising.
Absolutely. Under-promise, over-perform. Okay, and that ties right into our point here. Don't promise more than you can deliver. Know your results of your publications. Know the results you're generating. Be able to share testimonials specifically from those who are advertising with you. So, for example, if you have a home style publication, a home improvement, and you're working with a carpet company, and you know the kinds of results that they are gleaning, then you know that you can talk to other carpet companies about that. Now, clearly, that's not disclosing who that carpet company is, but you could be very comfortable to say, look, we've worked with others in the carpet sector. We know what we're capable of. Here are the number of phone calls you might be able to expect. Here are the number of website leads you might be able to expect. Here are some stories or examples of what other carpet advertisers have done in our publication, okay? And also case studies. Case studies are an example where it's sort of the classic once upon a time. We once had an advertiser come to us who was in the carpet business, and they were having the following problems. Not enough leads, not enough walk-in traffic, bottom line, not enough revenue. As a result of working with our publication or our newspaper or our direct mail catalog, whatever that might be, here are some examples of what we actually did. So, Jed, what strikes you related to this part about don't promise more than can be delivered?
Well, I think that the examples that you give don't necessarily all have to be home runs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it gives a certain degree of credibility when you can talk about an advertiser who does well, but maybe not phenomenally well. You know, mm-hmm. and gets 15 leads a week as opposed mm-hmm. to 250. It's. I think that those types of things, as long as you can kind of set the framework for an advertiser, is certainly going to help them understand what the possibilities are.
Absolutely. And if you really think about the lifetime value of an advertiser, you don't want to burn a bridge, right?
Right.
Okay. So frankly, somebody who sells high-end Persian rugs when the average sale is $2,000. versus someone who's selling Chinese dinners that the average sale is $10. Those are different kinds of advertisers. You know, if you're working with a restaurant category and Persian rugs and RVs, depending on your publication and your profile, guess what? Those are different price points, and they're going to perform differently. Right, Jed?
Sure, of course.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Let's talk about point number two. And again, we're going to cover 10 here today. And the second point from this survey was do your homework. Do your homework. Sounds so basic, all right? But it really is not, in fact. Because when we're doing our homework, we can come into our meetings, and we'll talk more about some of the specifics on this. But doing our homework is so basic, tied to, you know, do we know where their print advertising is? You know, do we know what else they're doing as far as direct mail, TV, radio, billboards? What else do we know? Have we surfed their website? Are we familiar with their products and their services? Are we prepared to ask them questions about how they serve their clients and customers? Do we know anything about their competitors? Have we surfed the website of competitors? Do we have something interesting to talk about? Gee, it's interesting. I see that, you know, you're selling RVs, but your competitors sell RVs, storages, and trailer hitches. I'm curious why. Doing your homework says you care. It says you're a professional. And quite frankly, the kind of prep that's available today, including the website, it's a whole lot easier. Take it one more step. If you're meeting with Mary Brown at Tom's RV's Center, have you been to Mary Brown's LinkedIn profile? There's 55 million people at LinkedIn. There's a pretty good chance your buyer, your decision maker, your prospect is there. You pull that up and you can see where they went to college, where they live, companies they work for, their website, recommendations. There is a wealth of information. So while this point sounds so basic, what I don't hear enough of in the marketplace is we're taking 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 minutes or an hour to prepare. Because when we make that preparation and when we do that kind of prep, and from this survey, we know that this is one of the recommendations. That means the marketplace is saying that we're not coming into these meetings thoroughly prepared. And in the end, we look like every other advertising sales rep who's come through the door or through the phone line. Jed, comment right on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's so critical, and there's so much information available. You know, before you even walk into a customer, you can have, a real plan formulated. You know, if not on paper, at least in your head, you know, about what makes sense for that type of advertiser, what some of the market pressures are in terms of seasonality or in terms of, when people are buying. All of that information just makes it so much more likely that someone's going to want to buy. You know, another thing which you didn't mention but is worth sort of noting is that another thing which is really pretty readily available is if you know the types of products that the advertiser that you're meeting with represents, oftentimes you can find out if there's co-op advertising available even before you go to the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And then, of course, we also have, have they been a current advertiser with us? Have they been a past advertiser in my competitors? Are they a current advertiser? Are they a past advertiser? Right?
Right.
We can also do that work as well. Here's another piece related to do your homework. Take the email address of the person you're meeting with, put that in Google. See what you find. Take their website, www.blank.com. Put that in Google. See what you find. You might find press releases. You might find presentations that have been given. You might find breaking news about the company. You might find legal action. Who knows what you'll find? And the good news is you went out looking for it. Okay? So do your homework. Jed and myself, cannot stress enough the importance of point number two. You have to do it to set yourself apart from the best and to set yourself apart from the rest. It is an absolute key part of doing business, okay? Let's pause because we have a question that came in from Bill, and Bill says, how do you educate buyers to understand the value of advertising, okay? And Bill, to your question, that value of advertising comes directly from us. We really are out in the marketplace doing that education, educating our clients on the value of advertising, the kind of results, the brand awareness, case studies, testimonials, success stories, updates related to work we're doing in their sector or what's happening in the competitive market space. All of those things are absolutely key. For example, we have a number of our publishing clients that do work in the real estate realtor sector. Okay, if you roll the clock back 2 and 3 years ago, the really, really big deal, all right, was all about leads. Today, the leads are down. We know what's happened in that sector. The leads are down. What's really stepping up is the branding and the marketing. All right, for any of you that have looked to sell a home in the last 6, 12, 18 months, you want to sit down and you want to know the marketing that that realtor is going to do for you if you're going to list with them. So there's been a shift in that perspective. So, Bill, to your question, it's excellent. Only you can educate the marketplace related to the value of the advertising and what the trends are in these economic times. Okay, that comes directly from us. Let's talk about number three. And by the way, Bill, thanks for your question. We'll continue to take questions. Just send an email to ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to our meeting notes, and we will tie that right in here. Number three. Explain why your product is best. Again, these are decision makers. 1,100 decision makers said, explain why your product is best, and would you buy it if this was your business? Okay, I sort of call this my grandmother's principle, right? My grandmother owned a sewing shop. You know, would I sell my advertising to her, my newspaper ad, my direct mail approach, my publication? Okay, my grandmother owned a nursing home. Would I engage her? Or she was a realtor. Would she be my client and why? Okay, so explain why your product is best in a very succinct way. Now, for those of you that have been on our calls along the way and over the years, and those of you on this call that I've worked with and hundreds of publications around the world, you know that I am a major believer in a media summary. Looks just like a checkerboard. Okay, down the left-hand side, the key points that set you apart. Down the middle, all of the information related to you and your publication. Remember, every one of those points has got to be defendable, and you have to be willing to present. So if you say, my distribution is 40,000 and we direct mail it, then you have got to be willing to show your postal receipt and even your printer invoice. If you say that you're at 800 distribution locations, then you've got to be willing to present all 800 locations. All right? So if you're going to talk about why your product is best, I'm a major believer in show me, don't tell me. And if you can't do that, you need to be able to. So a media summary is going to also show your print exposure, your web exposure, and your newsletter. It ties all three together into a media summary. Okay. Now, the flip side of that is a media comparison when we're in a competitive selling arena, and we'll talk about that a little later in one of our points here. Okay, Jed, a comment about why our product is best.
Yeah, I guess I would just add to that that, you know, I would say that it's more important to talk about why your product is best within the framework of what it is that you do as opposed to just sort of why it's the best ever. I mean, I talk to a lot of publications, probably, I don't know, 100, 150 a week, and, you know, it's shocking how many publications represent the wealthiest neighborhoods in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably talk to 25 a week, you know, all of whom represent the wealthiest neighborhoods in the country, you know. I mean, it can't all be true, you know. And so there's this impression that a lot of, it seems like many publications out there have, that unless they're able to prove that, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett read their publication, that you know, that they're dead in the water. When in fact, it's more important to make a good argument about why your publication is reaching a very specific audience, an audience that, you know, that other publications aren't, or you're reaching that audience better. Not necessarily that the audience is more than anyone else had imagined it possibly could be.
Absolutely. And this is Ernest just dovetailing behind Jed what you just said, and that is that know your audience and know it really well. And it doesn't have to be the Warren Buffetts, right? I mean, it could be a cross-section. We have those on this call that focus on travel, that focus on healthy living, that focus on city dogs, that focus on indoor advertising. I mean, I'm just looking at Christian News, Science News, Eco Publications. I mean, know your audience and be able to describe and define your audience. And that ties directly in to surveying your audience frequently so that you know more about your audience than you knew even 6 weeks ago or 90 days ago, and you're feeding that data right back to your advertisers, that you're showing them, and your prospective advertisers, that you're showing them exactly what those emerging trends are. For example, we have a newsletter coming out for our publication clients that are working on their search engine optimization. One of the emerging trends from Google is that 20% of the terms being typed today were not typed at all in the last 90 days. That tells us that the train is constantly moving for the search terms and the search phrases, and we have to continue to watch that if there's going to be optimization work. Now, that's data that's maybe 72 hours old, and I can't wait to share that with our clients, okay, and serve them really well. And then that also ties in nicely when you're meeting with prospective clients. So whatever is happening new and emerging in your sector, in your business, in your industry, with competitors, you want to capture that information and tie that in here. That also ties into what? Do your homework
as well,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Jed, we have a quick question that just came in from Jennifer. What is co-op advertising? You want to just say a word about that real quick?
Sure. For many, mostly products, when you have, you know, if you're dealing with an advertiser who is representing a salesperson for another product, you know, the classic example would be, you know, refrigerators, right? So if you're, you know, if someone's selling refrigerators and Whirlpool is, is one of their products, Whirlpool has a program to get people to advertise their products more. So what they do is they share the cost with the retail merchant to try to get them to put, you know, a picture of Whirlpool refrigerators in their ad. You know, it's kind of this murky world where no one's exactly sure. Most merchants don't take the time to kind of read through the rule book and understand what's available to them. But there's an enormous amount of money available, across a wide range of businesses. The trick is just sort of helping your advertiser, first of all, understand that it's available, and then second of all, understand how to actually have access to it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So, Jennifer, we hope that that's helpful. If you'd like more clarification, ping us back a note, and we'll answer a follow-through question on that. Let's move to point number four. Point number four is my absolute favorite. I can tell all of you that at different times in my corporate days, I've had more than 60 sales professionals and managers working for me, and I spent more than half my time in the field and on the road with them. And the very first thing that I looked for when we went out to make joint sales calls and meetings, and these were all face-to-face, sometimes by phone, but primarily shoe leather, the old-fashioned kind that we made cold calls, warm calls, booked meetings, worked our territory geographically. And one of the first things I looked to see is that if they brought a blank pad in to make notes, in addition to doing the homework that they did the night before, but as we walked in, I wanted to be certain that they had a blank pad because I wanted to know if they were going to be making notes. The next point number four, is listen. Listen. And we as salespeople, starting with myself, okay, only listen in a limited way if we're just listening. But if we're required to make and take notes, then we will succeed. So the better the listener you are, including on this call, the more notes you will have. I'm hoping by the end of this call, you will have at least one full page of written notes, and maybe two. That tells me that you had to listen really, really closely to this call and meeting, and that tells me that you have a far better chance of implementing the key points from our meeting today because you took those notes. And that's going to be what I can tell you in advance, one of the last things we'll share at the end of this call. Take those notes, take your meeting notes, and share them with your team. Bring them into your next sales meeting. Okay? So the only way to be able to effectively sell in person or by phone is to be making notes. It allows you to, first off, you have to listen really, really well. Number two, it means that you can do a summary close through the course of that meeting. So let me just clarify. So you sell Persian rugs, you're targeting this demographic area, you're targeting this type of buyer, you're looking at this average price, And let me clarify, you've tried direct mail, that didn't work. You tried a catalog, that hasn't been successful. You've tried referrals and word of mouth, that hasn't been enough. Did I miss any points? Okay, great. Now let's go to the other side and talk about the things that you're excited about related to our publication. You're excited about our audience, our distribution area. You're excited because you can see other competitors are here, and you've heard us talk about case studies. And you feel like our cost per thousand, our CPM is in line. Does all that make sense? Beautiful. And you also mentioned your budget was $750 a month. Fantastic. That'll be a half page in our publication. That summary can only happen. That was probably 10 or 12 points, Jed, that I rattled off there. I could never do that from my memory.
Right.
I could never do that 30 and 40 minutes into a meeting. Okay, and if I'm face-to-face and I'm making those notes, I'm telling that buyer that I am listening and I'm setting myself apart from the rest and the best. If I'm by phone, I'm also going to say, let me write that down. Let me make a note of that. Oh, boy, that's interesting. Let me clarify my notes right here. I'm going to tell you, Jed, that I'm making notes.
Okay. Right.
The other point is it allows you a post-meeting follow-up. If you don't generate that sale, you can revert back to your notes. You can go back to your office and email a follow-up presentation or a follow-up on the action steps. For example, Jed, if I told you that I'm going to create a spec ad, if I'm also going to go look at some economic trends in your specific market or with your specific clients, any of those things, I can tell you that I'm going to come back and do that by email. Or if I'm working with you, Jed, by phone, easy enough. Hey, Jed, that's beautiful. I got all of these notes. Let me walk you through the action steps I'm going to follow through. Look for an email in the next 20 minutes. And you're like, wow, that Ernest is serious.
Right.
Yeah, he's serious, okay? Here's the other reason why this listening point is so key. There are 21 negotiating skills. For those of you that have worked with me, you've been through the program, okay? 21 negotiating skills. Negotiating begins with your written notes, and it tells me not only that you're listening, but that you're going to field every one of their objections. Here's what I often hear. I hear something like this. So the buyer will say, well, the things that I really want to address, I'm concerned about the frequency of your publication. I really want to talk about your web presence, and I'm not really happy about your cost per thousand. And the sales rep comes right in and says, let me address your cost per thousand, skipping over the first two objections. It is impossible as an advertising sales professional to capture all five or all seven or all three objections unless you wrote them down. You might have heard them, but unless you write them down and take them one at a time and isolate each of those one at a time, then you're not telling a buyer that you're on top of your game and you're not telling them that you're listening. We salespeople, me included, for 2.5 decades, have recognized that that is a blind spot for me. That's why I'm in sales. That's why I'm a sales and leadership coach and advisor, because I love the work that I do. And I only can do the work that I do because I'm making those notes and because I've helped my clients follow that same step. Okay? So the only way to handle negotiations and negotiating is to have written notes to work from, and then you go step by step by step. And in some cases, Jed, that negotiating means we take it offline. Hey, Jed, thanks so much, and I know we've covered three of the points. I need to do a little research on number four, and then I need to check with my sales manager on number five and number six. Jed, is that okay if I follow up with you on four, five, and six?
Right.
And you say, yes, of course. Okay? So listen. Jed, anything else to add to point number four about listening?
I think it's a great point, and I think it's it's the kind of thing that whether it's follow up for to provide specific information or just your next meeting with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it goes back to doing your homework where you can really better prepare for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
if you remember more accurately what happened the last time you were there.
Perfect. Absolutely. Those notes dovetail right into our CRM, right? Our client relationship manager, right? Where we
right.
can store those notes and keep track. Absolutely. I've got notes from client meetings that I had 15 years ago, and I'm like, oh, yeah, remember the last time we chatted, you said, or we covered, and they're like, what? Oh, yeah, well, I've got 15,000, you know, clients and prospects and conversations recorded in my database. Here, let me tell you the last time you came to my website. And they're like, what? Or subscribe to my newsletter, right?
There's a fine line between organization and stalking, right?
how about just paying attention, right? let's shift here. We got a question that came in from Paige. Paige says, we're a new publication coming to town. Most people's yearly ad budgets have already been established. Is there a way to get around this? Okay. Paige, it's a great question. Budgets are very, very flexible, and buyers have the opportunity to move their budgets around. That is a very, very standard objection that, quite honestly, is nothing but smoke. You have to both sell through that. You have to listen to it. And then sell through that, and every decision maker you're sitting down with has the ability to take from this budget, to move from that budget, to take an ad and reduce it, to take some advertising and adjust the frequency, for example. There's all kinds of ways to work through that, so do not consider that in stone. Here's the reason I know that for a fact, okay? When I was building budgets in my corporate days, I would reach out to the Yellow Pages just to see what their increase was, and I would get some version of it's going to increase by 2% and it starts in the month of June, so I knew to make that adjustment. And then I realized that I was reaching out to learn about Yellow Pages. I realized how many of my advertisers are reaching out to me to see what the rate increase will be next year. And I sort of realized it was very few to really none. And that's when it occurred to me, that was that eureka moment, Jed, that I paused and said, you know what? Budgets are smudget. People are saying the words, but there's a ton of flexibility in there. Okay.
Right, as long as you give them a reason to make a change, because change is always, it's always more about it being just hard to do than not mm-hmm. being able to do it.
Absolutely. Totally. Let's talk about the next point, number five. Follow up when you say you will, even if it's to say you're not sure. Now, this is right back up to don't promise more than you can deliver. Okay, follow up when you say you will, point number five, even if you say you're not sure yet. An email comes in and a person poses a question and you don't have an answer, don't let it sit for 24 hours. Ping them back and say, hey, I got it. Let me dig a little deeper. Hey, I got it. I'll send you a fuller response tomorrow. Emails that come in today, phone calls that come in today, get responded to today. Everything that comes in today, goes out today, is the gold standard, and the absolute standard is within 24 hours or less. So an email that comes in or a phone call that comes in at 3 today, you have until 3 tomorrow, but the best will handle it today, the second best will handle it tomorrow morning, okay, at the very least the following day by 3 o'clock, okay? So and even if it's to say, I don't know, or I have to check, or let me, actually buyers prefer that. If you hear six objections about your publication and the salesperson rolls out a response to all six, they may be extremely good. Buyers and decision makers actually they'll like to hear, let me research that, let me make a note on that, let me clarify, Jed, what you just said. Let me go back and talk to my editors about that. Let me go work with my circulation team and see what numbers I can extract. Or let me go back and look at the survey that we did so I can answer that question. I know the answer is, and I'm going to field it right here, but let me go back and confirm. Just buyers go nuts for that. And you might say, Ernest, doesn't it sound like I don't know what I'm talking about? Doesn't it sound like I could have just BS'd my way through? Come on, they're just buyers. Listen, let me tell you something. Buyers are used to asking six questions, getting six answers. In the back of their mind, they're really wondering which one of those were true or not. They will prefer to hear, let me research, let me check, let me confirm. Now, you can't do that for all six. That says you know nothing. That says you were not prepared. We're right back to do your homework. You were not prepared for that meeting, okay? But it's okay to use it strategically once or twice in a meeting, and then it gives you, Jed, what? An opportunity to follow back up with that buyer.
Right.
That ain't all bad, right?
Right. Makes sense.
Okay. So, and the other part is that it sets you apart from the rest, okay? And it also gives you an opportunity when you do that kind of follow-up to continue to ask for referrals because you've earned their business. You've earned their trust. You've earned their respect, okay? So, Paige, I'm hoping that that was helpful related to budgets. And we'll continue to tuck in the questions. As you have questions, just send them to Ernest@powerhour.com. We'll just weave them right into our call. Let's talk about number six. Be on top of your game and pay attention to what I say. okay? Be on top of your game and pay attention to what I say. This also, Jed, dovetails to what we talked about a minute ago, right? About, you know, if there's three objections or four objections, you have to write those down and handle every single one so you tell that buyer that you heard their objections, yes?
Right.
Because what happens, Jed, if we handle the last two objections and we skip the first two?
Sounds like we're avoiding them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bet. That those objections. And for those of you that like to sell from a media kit, I'm a much bigger believer in selling from a media summary and a media comparison. But the same rules apply. From a media kit and a media presentation, every single page in your media kit has two or three or four stop points where you might pause and say, boy, impressive our circulation story. Gee, were you aware, you know, of how much trade show exposure we had? Wow, you know, you can see the case studies we're really proud of. Makes sense to you? Those are small, mini, affirming moments in a presentation that you're going to do every step of the way. My rule of thumb is that every single page in your media presentation has at least two or three stop points, and you never turn the page, whether it's electronic or face-to-face, you never turn the page to the next one until you've asked the question, anything else on this page before we go forward? Okay, anything else on this page before we go forward? Point number seven, get to the point. Decision makers in small and medium-sized businesses giving advice to media sales reps like all of us and all of you, get to the point. And that comes from our prep, okay? And that also means disruptive selling. I want you to write down those two words, disruptive selling. You have got to find a way to engage that buyer. So when they talk about get to the point, you get to the point not by how crisply you give your presentation. That's not what they're saying here. Disrupting selling says that you have given them reason to pause and wonder if the status quo, what they've always been doing, what they're going to continue to do, has a reason to change. Disruptive selling says, I've done a very informative survey on the three publications where you're advertising, and I'm going to tell you one by one by one the things they do well and the things they're not. In fact, do you know that two of the three publications that you currently advertise in, I've done my homework, will not be at the largest show because we put that on and we don't permit them there? By the way, that's 60,000 prospects coming through that show door. Do I have your attention? Did I get to the point? Jed, did I get to the point on that?
Absolutely.
I rattled your cage. I'm rattling the cage of that buyer in a disruptive, good way. Now, for those of us that are parents, we don't want to hear that our Johnny or our Mary is disruptive in class, right? That's not going to cut it. That's not what we're looking for. But disruptive means that you have to, in your presentation, in the first 3 to 5 minutes, find a way to not only jar that prospect from sort of status quo and everything's groovy and I'm going to always do what I've done because I've done it and I'll keep on doing it. Pretty good English there, right, Jed? I did it. I'm going to be doing it.
Right.
The point is, unless you jar them from that, their feeling is that we are not getting to the point and we're not giving them a reason to buy and we're wasting their time. So disruptive selling comes from knowing your competitors, knowing the marketplace, knowing the trends. All right, there's a note here. Let's see, who posts? We got a note from, a note from Rosanna, who says, will magazines and publications be a viable product in the future? Rosanna, let me be disruptive in the thinking. I've seen the research about this. Very viable. I have the research, and I'm going to bring it in for our meeting. Have I disrupted your thinking? That I'm telling you that I've got the research I'm going to bring to our meeting to show you how viable publications are and how important. Your other question was about the luxury market recovering, if at all. I have the data on that as well. I'm going to walk you through and I'm going to show you what I know about that data, and I'm going to show you exactly, Rosanna, how our publication reaches that and exactly the changes that we've made in the last 12 and 24 months to adapt to the economic times. I only want 20 minutes of your time tomorrow. Rosanna, I'm hoping that that was disruptive enough and an example of what we're talking about. Okay, I'm hoping to all of you when I mentioned about web searches changing every, by 20%, you pause and go, whoa, How often are we looking at our website? What do we know about our website, for example? That's an example of disruptive selling. And you've got to be able to do the same with your prospects, and that's what these buyers are saying under cut to the chase, get to the point. Jed, a comment or observation on that?
No, I think it's a an excellent point. I think a lot of it, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, salespeople just really need to practice that, because they're saying things which should be taken as disruptive pieces of information, right? But it becomes so, you know, so automatic that they sometimes forget what the most important part of the or what the most compelling part of their, you know, of their sales pitch or presentation really is.
Yep, perfect. In fact, we got an email in from Jay who said, relationships. So far, the top 10 seem very relationship-driven, not so much product and service. Absolutely, Jay, that there is the relationship between we as the sales and those that we're selling to. But make no mistake, there is a ton of what our competitive summaries are, what our media summaries are, what our testimonials are, what our case studies are. So just recognize that, Jay, it's a blend of both. It's a blend of both. But so often we go in and just say, let me show you my circulation. Let me show you my website. Let me show you. And we're not in there saying, let me tell you what sets us apart. Let me disrupt your thinking about what you've always thought was acceptable. Oh, by the way, while we're at it, with your permission, I've done my homework. Let me show you how we compare to those in the marketplace. Let me show you the research I've done related to this sector and how we've shifted in given these economic times. So it's a bit of both here. Let's look at number eight, Jed. My time is valuable. My time is valuable. In 1988, I was sitting in Southern California, San Diego. I went out to give a sales presentation. The person says, you have 20 minutes, period. I took off my watch. This was a face-to-face meeting, Jed. I took off my watch and I put it on the table. And I said, I'll be done in 19. She said, okay, great, let's roll. And as we rolled along, we got to 19 minutes. And I said, I want to be respectful. You only gave me 20. We're at 19 minutes. She goes, I like what I hear. Keep talking. Don't leave. Buyers use this. My time is valuable. In many cases, look, I'm going to give you 10 minutes. Look, I'm going to give you 20 minutes. And you say, you know what? I'll take half of that. We've got a great story. If it's still valuable for you, we'll keep chatting. If it's not, we're done. I know that when I had salespeople come into my office, Jed, I would tell them right out of the gate, hey, thanks so much for coming in to talk to me about your postal meter. Great, come on in. I got just 10 minutes. And I meant it. That's all I was giving them. I was trying to say to them to be polite that I was giving you 10 minutes. But if the meeting was going well and I was interested, guess what? I all of a sudden had 30 minutes. Isn't that interesting? The time expanded. But if I didn't like Jed the presentation, we were done in 9.
Right.
Okay? So my time is valuable. And that's the other key point as media sales professionals, okay, in order to be disruptive, cut to the chase and make certain that in the first 3 minutes or 5 minutes or less, you have made two or three of your biggest points. Don't hold it off and feel like you've got to serve the soup and salad and then the meal to get to dessert.
Right. And don't spend 5 or 10 minutes, you know, trying to find out about the person's family and, mm-hmm. and what kind of, you know, ice cream they like. I mean, I see a lot of salespeople do that, and I know the reason for it, trying to establish a connection, but you know, it seems like it's an artificial way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Here's a perfect question that just came in. Dave asks, would you advise sending a media kit to a potential buyer to make a cold prior to making a cold phone call? Absolutely, 100% no, Dave. No one can sell or tell your story better than you, so just a media kit will never engage. It's not disruptive enough, but you might send an email that includes two or three of the most disruptive points that you want to make to get the attention of that prospect, and that may also be the voice message that you leave. Okay, so work email and phone in tandem with the key points that you're the most proud of, the key points that set you apart. For example, mine would be, you know, and hi, Jed, and this is Ernest, and there's an amazing show this upcoming month. There's going to be 60,000 visitors. Our publication is a sponsor of that. And, by the way, this publication, and that publication, I've done my homework. I know you advertise there. None of them have access to the show. It's our show. I'd like to talk to you about that show, plus my website, plus my newsletter, plus print some print advertising. And then, Dave, I'd come back around and email Jed that note as well. So he'd have it both in writing, he could see that, and then I would use that to set the stage for the meeting, and then once I had the meeting, then I would tie in the media kit itself. Okay? So, Dave, I'm hoping that answers your question. Jay, thanks for your question. Rosanna, thanks for your question as well. So my time is valuable. Let's talk about number 10. Cut to the chase. Make it quick. This is coming directly from these decision makers. Now, their words. Cut to the chase. Make it quick and tell me exactly what you can do. Exactly what you can do. All right? Once again, the decision makers are saying, and in this survey of 1,100 small and medium-sized businesses, they want us to cut to the chase. So this relates what? Go back to, you know, to our homework, right? Don't promise what you can't deliver. We talked earlier about testimonials. Let's tie in right here the use of ROI, return on investment, where we can show examples of advertisers and what they've generated, whether it's about leads, revenue, new biz, proposals, prospects. What can we talk about? And the other side of this is what I call the use of teardowns. We did an entire call on this, Jed, a couple of years ago, the use of teardowns. So if I know that I'm walking into an advertiser, and let's use again the RV example, and they've got three full pages in my competitors, they've got huge ads and big banner ads and leaderboard ads on the websites of three other competitors, I already know what they're spending. I can already walk in there and say, look, I know you're spending 10 grand a month at best from what I can see. What did I miss? Beautiful. Listen, I know the rate cards of every website, every direct competitor, every publication. Look, I've done some analysis here, and I could show you how to take your three print plus your three websites, the total of six, add me in, total of seven now, and keep the same budget. Do I have your attention? Beautiful. Let me show you my plan. Here's what I've got. Here are the six sources you've got, and here's from their rate card what I'm estimating you're spending. Am I right? Close, not, let's noodle that. Perfect. Now let me show you my proposed plan that tucks me in, that gives you seven sources, and for the same amount. Let's go work through that as well. That's what I call a teardown approach, and that takes planning in advance of the meeting and knowing your competitors. Okay? I've never sold or done any coaching and training around the competitive selling that does not include the use of teardowns. And in another call, I'll tell you the longer story of why I call that a teardown, but long and short of it, that's a whole call all by itself. Okay? Jed, any comments about this? Cut to the chase, make it quick.
Right. I mean, it's critical, and it sort of, you know, matches with all the other points. You know, you don't want the sales call to be a social event. You know, you want it to be, you know, specifically about your publication.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And let me tuck in a question. Brian says, what is the best way to give an advertiser insight as to why they should buy bigger ads than they usually run? Brian, it's a great story, and I can tell you, not only anecdotally but numerically, that a quarter page gets less results than a half page, which gets less results than a full page. Or put another way, the more you spend, the larger the ad, you get more phone calls, you get more leads and more activities. The same go for website revenue strategies. Better placement, better visibility, gets more hits, drives more revenue. So you have to be able to numerically show that larger ads bring more results, and you can do that with telephone tracking. We've done entire calls related to that, or website tracking as well, that will show you, that will validate what we all have known intuitively for a long, long time. You also asked a follow-through question. How do you discuss running longer frequencies during these uncertain economic times? I will share with all of you, and for those of you that have joined prior calls about, we did entire calls about the merchandising of a rate card, an entire call on that, and we even use examples and share that with those who joined us in prior calls. I'm a huge believer in how you merchandise a rate card, and it does not include a one-time or open rate, because you know what? I wouldn't go sell that to my grandmother. That's not in her best interest for her little sewing shop. We know that advertising takes repetition and frequency with the right audience. And there's all kinds of research related to that. If you have that, great, and if you don't, you need that. But the point on this, Brian, is that longer-term frequencies produce better results. The other part in the merchandising of a rate card, when you do it correctly, there is only one option, and that is the longest term. And in that longest term, there's enough price incentive that why would somebody go for the 3-month or the 6-month or the 4-issue or the 8-issue when the annual or the 12 makes that much more sense, and you've given them financial incentive to do that. What I notice in most rate cards is that when you look at the spread of 3-6-12 or 4-8 or 12 or 2-4-6, whatever they are, the gap is so small that the buyer says, of course, I'll opt to the shorter term. There's no incentive for them to go beyond that. Okay, so Brian, I'm hoping that's helpful. When we open up the call in a couple of minutes, if you have a follow-through question, we can address that. The last point, point number 10, you are here to help me. Be curious. Be creative when you come into these meetings. Bring in spec ads if you're face-to-face or electronically. Show them their current campaign. Show them that the adjustment to their other campaigns. Produce not only spec ads, but offer to produce the actual artwork that will take their 3 full-page ads and reduce them to 3 half-page ads. Make it easy is what they're saying. You're here to help me. Most of our buyers don't have the art departments, the graphics background, the savviness to look across the marketplace and revise and adjust and add you in as the 7th source when they really only had 6. All right? So just remember that in this 10th point, you're there to help that buyer, and you get that because you did your homework, you listened, you were on top of your game and paid attention, you're following through, you've earned the right to help them and to be a resource, okay? 10 key points. We'll come back later this year and talk about the other 10. I want to wrap up with some of the things related to these recommendations, and then we'll pause and we'll open up your line, and we'll field some questions more informally. But these recommendations are only as good as you put them in practice. I'm hoping, and we're hoping, Jed and I, that you have lots of notes. That follows through exactly with what we're talking about. We want to encourage you to read them daily. Put them on your desk. Laminate them. We want to encourage you to share them with your team. Do some role plays. For those of you that are sales leaders on this call, reward success because team members are doing their homework, are using teardowns, are weaving in media summaries, can show testimonials and case studies. Reward your team for incorporating these things. This is not the Ernest and Jed list. This is a survey of 1,100 decision makers in small and medium-sized businesses that were asked, what one recommendation would you give to a media sales rep? This is really a big deal. Okay, every single point here is absolutely key, and you want and need to incorporate it into your selling approach and into your sales team. Okay? Whew, Jed, that was a lot of materials, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
We covered a lot of ground. That's some tall shooting, I think they say in Texas. How about wrapping us up here, Jed? What would we like to say to the group in closing? I'll then wrap up the call, and then we'll open up the line informally, okay?
Yeah, great. No, I you know, again, you know, thanks, Ernest, for all the information. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, you know, sort of seems, you know, hopefully seems obvious to a lot of people on the call, but it's, you know, but it's really sort of, you know, honing the execution of it that where the value probably comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, thanks, Ernest, and I want to thank everyone for joining us.
Absolutely, an absolute pleasure. And to all of you, thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure here. I work with about 700 publications in 8 time zones around the world. We have a deep passion for helping our clients succeed, whether it's business and sales coaching and training, whether it's recruiting, helping you find really great and strong people, whether it's your website and maximizing those revenue opportunities from there, which is a really must-have. You have to have that in sync with your publication and even the buying and selling of publications. So if along the way we can help you, please let us know. It's a delight to be here, Jed. Thank you so much for all of your support and the support from your MediaBits team. I'm going to pause our call right here.